Todd Young enters the 2016 race for U.S. Senate. Is he the GOP favorite? John Gregg has a better fundraising quarter than Mike Pence. What's it mean? The state budget surplus grows. Charles Harrison says no to a run for mayor. And the U.S. Attorney General visits Indiana. That plus an honor for Tamika Catchings and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 17, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Congressman Todd Young joined the field in the 2016 race for U.S. Senate. He is the third Republican and second congressman in the race. He made the announcement in a web video.
And the best way I can think of to give back is to ensure that every Hoosier family enjoys a better future. That's why I'm running for U.S. Senate.
Is the Senate field set? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Pete Seat. John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Pete Seat, is Todd Young the favorite?
Well, we should probably start off by saying I'm helping Eric Holcomb.
Which is why I asked you that question.
Yeah, right. So to answer your question, no, it's Eric Holcomb, slightly biased in that. I don't think the field is set yet. There's talk that there will be another candidate who will join, but I think whomever joins beyond this point will only siphon votes from the others. We will have our next U.S. senator from one of these three. In the end, though, you know, Todd Young is raising a lot of money, but I think this nomination will be earned and not bought, and that's going to be the key.
Certainly, that's Eric Holcomb's hope. But don't we let, if the field stays as it is, you got Eric Holcomb and Todd Young fighting over the moderate portion of the Republican Party and Marlon Stutzman to the right.
Well, that's the easy, lazy analysis. Forgive me for saying that. There's a lot more to this than that. I'm speaking from as Eric's spokesperson here, but he's traveling around the state, meeting with more than just your establishment people, and that'll continue for several months to come.
Your analysis.
Well, this nomination isn't bought, it'll be the first Republican nomination that hasn't been. You know, that's the nature of the game there.
Actually, you go back to like 2012, Richard Murdoch did not buy that nomination
Dick Lugar. That's true, because he was to the right of Attila the Hun. And so there's still room in there, it seems to me, for Mike Delf to come in and rattle everyone's cage, because obviously Todd Young is not the darling of the Tea Party. Having voted to reopen government, that's a fatal flaw as far as many of them are concerned. So, I don't know. The rush to the right, they're going to position themselves badly for a U.S. Senate seat contest.
Okay. I think what you will see is Marlon Stutzman attacking Todd Young's voting record.
Well, of course. I mean, that'll be the nature of the game, because there will have to be, there will be that perceived need for separation. And, when you get into the heat of the battle, the on-the-ground war that, I hate to say war, the on-the-ground effort by Eric Holcomb, I think has a real chance to play well in Indiana. But I think it will have to work very hard to overcome the money advantage that Todd Young is going to have. But I do think it's going to be an interesting, akin to Anne's used the analogy before, a circular firing squad, because you are going to have some very distinct positions, and they're going to be taking shots at each other, and it's going to be a well-earned nomination when it's done.
It's a beautiful thing is what it is.
John, what do you think of this practice that we've seen increasingly this year of using web videos and social media in order to launch a campaign rather than an announcement?
Yeah, that caught my attention. Clearly, that seems to be the fashionable way to announce one's formal candidacy. The reason, I suppose, is obvious. You can control the message. You're not having to deal with slips of the tongue, because presumably they've been edited out before this is posted, if in fact there were any. No pesky reporter questions about what this fundraising issue means or that.
And then you go do interviews with reporters the next day and you get a two-day hit.
Sure. I mean, this...
He's following in Hillary Clinton's footsteps.
Well, I think he is in some ways.
He is.
No, it is. I do miss the balloon drops and all the old spectacle, but I think in the social media-driven world in which we live and the desire of all candidates, regardless of partisan stripe, to control the message to the extent possible, this is what we're going to see a lot more of.
Moving on now, John Gregg has a huge fundraising lead over the two other Democrats in the 2016 race for governor. He also raised more than Mike Pence in the last quarter. The Gregg campaign raised $1.75 million in the first 60 days of the campaign. He says it's a huge deal. Here's what Governor Pence had to say.
We're making great progress in this state. I think we're on the verge of record employment in Indiana. We've made great progress in our schools, in healthcare, innovation in Indiana, and to see the number of people that have been willing to be generous and support our reelection efforts at this point in the campaign means a great deal to us.
And Delaney, why didn't he answer the question?
Because he doesn't like the answer to the question. I mean, obviously, John Gregg did a tremendous job raising that money, and it's obviously a testament in part to his candidacy. It's also a reaction to Mike Pence. I mean, the signs against Pence are continuing to proliferate around central Indiana, and as I understand, in other parts of the state as well, and people have made up their mind about him, and they don't like him.
Okay, but you got three Democrats running, Glenda Ritz and Karen Talley.
That's right.
Neither one of them raised very much money. I mean, are the money people saying that John Gregg's the guy?
I think at the moment that's exactly what's being said, and that there's a desire there for no primary contest, and we'll see how that develops. We'll see whether the field is completely set yet. You know, there are, you know, this
well, is... Well, $1.75 million will discourage
is a
others.
Big discouragement to somebody who couldn't write a check for $1 million, for example.
Yeah. Is this a sign of trouble for Mike Pence?
Look, let's start with John Gregg's numbers. 1.3 of the 1.75 million, 75% of that was from PACs, corporations, other candidate committees, a paltry 25% from individuals. I mean, let's be serious. This doesn't show some kind of groundswell for John Gregg. On the flip side, 70% of Mike Pence's contributions were from individuals. And we're told that people are running from the hills.
He didn't answer the question either.
And, but this is reality. I mean,
it is reality.
A small portion more than the governor.
It's all green, right?
Yeah.
Oh, so now it's all green. But typically we're like, well, how much is individuals? How much is PAC? This is PAC money. These are labor interests. These are liberal groups.
Is Pence going to repudiate all PAC money?
He barely got any comparatively
speaking. Okay, but in the future going forward, is he not going to take it?
You just sat
is
here,
Is he not going to take it, he, is my
you
question,
You sat here
Pete.
And said people
is he
aren't
say
supporting
no
the governor.
PAC
completely
money.
False.
Let's try John. Let's
They're
try John. What's
Pence.
What's the takeaway from these numbers?
Yeah, those are good fundraising numbers, no doubt about it. And we've seen gubernatorial races over the past decade or two where you have very lopsided fundraising. And what that results in is an inability of... In many cases, the challenger.
For example, with Mike Pence versus John Gregg four years ago.
Right. The challenger to get his or her message, I guess it's always been his.
At least so far.
To get his message out there. Otherwise, it's sort of, the tree falling in the forest and nobody is there to hear it. The fact that we have this kind of start, and granted, there will be people, as Pete suggests, who will read into what portion is PAC money or corporate money versus individual contributions.
But the fact of the
that's all that matters, right? But the fact of the matter is, this suggests that they will be on a level playing field. If not a level playing field, at least both will
Close
be well.
Enough.
Both
Close
will
enough.
Be well Pence, equipped to get their messages out.
Pence still has an advantage when it comes to cash on hand. All right. Glenda Ritz, we're now learning, has reported contributions that were received during a time when the General Assembly was in session.
They were posted.
And that means that they're illegal. Her people are saying it's a clerical...
Right. If they were received during that time, that's a problem. If they were posted during that time, that's different.
Well, they were posted at several points between the beginning and the end of the General Assembly.
Right, but the question is when they were received.
Well, the bigger problem that she has, Anne, is that there aren't enough zeros behind the three and the four zeros. If she's got a clerical error, that's it.
Of course, she didn't have much money when she won for superintendent either.
We can talk about that, but this is a different... race, a much different race than that.
And it suggests some level of incompetence in running a campaign.
Well, let's not get carried away. I mean, it could be just a clerical error. It's embarrassing. There's no question about that. And it could end up costing a campaign not just money in terms of a fine or a reprimand, but momentum, if it even had any, because this is the kind of thing that, you know, people who are trying to take you seriously look at askance.
All right, the state budget surplus is above $2.1 billion and growing. The governor this week unveiled the final numbers for the fiscal year that ended June 30th. The surplus is the second highest in state history, and Mike Pence says it's the result of growth that took place following the RFRA controversy.
I believe that this near historic budget surplus is also a reflection of the fact that the last 3 months of fiscal 15 represented a robust revenues to the state of Indiana, giving evidence of the strength of Indiana's economy.
John Ketzenberger, does he get credit for that?
As much as any other Hoosier who pays his or her taxes, I suppose. Because these numbers are cyclical. Now, granted, they are above projection, and they do represent a very promising trend, so I'm not dismissing the performance. And I also am not blaming the governor for taking credit for it. What I am saying is that the economy moves on its own. And the economy has started to show greater improvement. We hope that it continues and that the revenue anticipated is greater than what has been forecast, because the forecast has been reduced three times over the course of the last budget cycle. It's been very difficult to get a handle on this economy. And so 3 months, while it's nice, is not a trend.
Yeah, he didn't mention the RFRA controversy, but by mentioning the last 3 months of the fiscal year, you're talking about the time period following that crisis, and it strikes me that he's trying to suggest that the crisis is over.
Well, if as you suggested in the initial question, the RFRA was somehow, the inference here is that it was good for business. The debate. I mean, that sort of seems.
I'm not sure anybody has suggested.
Well,
that.
Okay,
that's
maybe
kind of what he's suggesting.
But that would. I'm glad nobody's suggesting that, because that would be certainly be illogical if the notion is, was it the fix, a so-called fix that would be a business generator, or was it the initial legislation that was enacted? Because you can't have it both ways. As John suggests, these things are broader than any one state. They're global anymore. They're not even national to a large extent. So, but he's in the right place at the right time. And as John says, anybody in that office is going to take credit for the good things. And that's
okay.
That's as it should be.
All that, be that as it may, there are questions about how the money is spent and why we need $2.1 billion in the bank. Why do we?
Well, because you need a rainy day fund. I mean, we tell Americans they should save 10 to 15% for retirement
state government,
and for rainy
state
days.
Government, the goal for reserves has always been 12%. 12.5% is what Pence said. Mm-hmm. This is 14.5%.
Right. Which is a bad thing. I mean, it's bad that government is being responsible and protecting against a rainy day. I mean, look, Democrats are complaining about a $2 billion surplus.
When Democrat Frank O'Bannon was the governor, he had a $1.2 billion surplus, and the Republicans kept saying,
give it back. We're not a bank.
Yeah. And John Gregg turned that into an $800 million deficit and now wants to be in charge of 206. That
makes
sense.
What's really amazing about this is the focus on what's happened. We are spending, the revenue to education K through 12 is still lower than it was in 2009. even after his supposed projections and how much money he's put in. It is lower than fiscal 2009 through 2014. And that is a disgrace. They're reverting money from DCS.
They're not
and that's,
they're
that's
not
been
anymore.
The legislature fixed that, Ann.
Yeah, fine. Okay, what about from domestic violence? They're still doing that.
Not completely
he said
false.
Not anymore.
Oh,
we
should stop that now, too. Yeah. How about the roads? How about the money that local government needs to have public safety? And how about education? When you're talking about spending less 5 years later than we did in 2009.
Well, tell me this. He said one of the things that he may do because of the rosy budget picture is pay back $250 million that's owed to the unemployment trust fund.
Which helps create
jobs. It doesn't help. Oh, well, baloney. It helps create jobs. What it doesn't do is provide for early childhood education or to compensate teachers adequately or to pave the roads or anything else we need.
You hit it on the head, Jim, because this is so predictable. An element of the loyal opposition, again, and there's an ebb and flow here, will always take the opposite position. That's why you alluded to Frank O'Bannon sitting on the money, mm-hmm. and you had legislative leadership. I remember pushing shopping carts through a store,
yeah,
grocery store, showing what could be bought with the refund, as I recall. So let's just say for discussion that if Mike Pence wanted to refund all this money, you would have a certain faction of the Democratic caucus in the House and Senate saying that's not prudent, that's not fiscally
right.
prudent. So it's whatever, that's just par for,
No Democrat is arguing that you don't need a reserve. You need a reserve. There's no question about it. But you also need to do the fundamental things government does.
Part of what's going on here is that Mike Pence is pointing to the state budget picture as one of his strengths, and Democrats are trying to turn it into a weakness. Right?
One of his strengths is his ideology. But that's the only part of his ideology. He doesn't see a fundamental need to educate the next generation. He doesn't see a fundamental need to protect the next generation or to even fill the potholes. All he wants to do is say, see how much money.
You'll never admit that our fiscal outlook is a reason why we're able to create jobs. The reason
why
companies from
jobs.
Illinois come
you're
to
not
Indiana
creating jobs.
And help
the jobs
build our economy.
The jobs that you're creating, Pete, people need three of them now to pay their mortgage. That's the kind of job you're creating.
I look forward to visiting Fantasyland one day.
Well, it's not Fantasyland. Our income's gone down every year on your watch.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alert. This week's question, is a $2 billion surplus too big? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, I'll tell you at the end of the two-year budget period. Last week's question, should prison sentences for child pornography be increased in Indiana? 63% said yes, 37% said no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The race for mayor of Indianapolis is a head-to-head matchup now between Democrat Joe Hogsett and Republican Chuck Brewer. In spite of a mysterious petition drive, Reverend Charles Harrison said this week that he will not seek the office. He said he didn't know who organized the drive. Mayor Greg Ballard said he understands why people wanted Harrison to run.
I will tell you, he's a great citizens, and we're so lucky to have a guy like him in our city. We really are. He's a highly motivated and highly focused individual.
John Schwanes, will the candidates seek a Harrison endorsement now?
I don't think it's necessarily critical to either campaign. This is, to me, sort of a head-scratcher. Not that you would have this potential candidate's interest or involvement, and certainly he has prominence in the community for some of the organizational efforts and nonprofit mm-hmm. work he's done. But this whole thing with the solicitation of signatures on petition, I don't get that. And I'm not even sure who it would have helped or who it would have hurt.
I'm told that if a private individual paid for that, it wouldn't have to be reported. We may never learn who did it.
Right.
It's just a head scratcher. I think basically what this does is take us back to it's hit the reset button and it's the race is where it was.
And Joe Hogsett is a large favorite.
Well, I think that's a fair assessment at this point. He has a wide lead in terms of the amount of money that he has. The electoral trends have worked in the Democrats' favor, although they haven't won the big prize in the last two elections. And so I think if he executes, it's definitely in his advantage at this point. Long way to go still. I mean, you have all summer.
You anticipate a competitive race?
Well, I assume it'll be a competitive race, but I think you have to give the advantage to Hogsett. I don't think there's any question about it. Demographically, the only reason, I mean, we had a referendum on property taxes the first time, and we reelect incumbents, and that's the story of the last two mayoral races, but the demographics are definitely trending our way.
What does Chuck Brewer need to do to get into this race?
I think he just needs to do what Greg Ballard did in 2007 and get out into the community, get to know people, be a presence. And that's what helped. Sure, there was the property tax issue, but
yeah, I'm sorry, Republicans keep saying that, but the dynamics were so much different. Greg Ballard was running against an incumbent who basically shot himself in the foot, and I still he was the accidental mayor.
Hindsight's 20/20, Jim. If you were sitting at this
point,
I said
that on election day 2007.
I was introducing him to people on election day.
At this point, before that election, no one thought Greg Ballard was going to win, so I would never discredit Chuck Brewer.
Okay. U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch talked about the need to build relationships in what she called communities of color, where a distrust of the police often exists. Lynch made those remarks during a speech this week at the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives Conference in Indianapolis. She did not mention the tragic events of Ferguson, Missouri, New York, or Baltimore by name, but she did say that too often residents in minority communities feel like they are the target of police rather than the beneficiaries.
In recent months, a series of tragedies in cities across the country has reminded us that these breakdowns can have devastating consequences. And as we've seen, it's awakened the nation to these long-standing issues that we have a civic responsibility.
Pete, was that a noteworthy visit?
Absolutely. And it's noteworthy that while she was making these remarks in Indianapolis, she wasn't speaking about Indianapolis. I think that's a key point we all need to make. And of course, I, you know, feel a little awkward. Don't necessarily have the complexion to be talking with some credibility about these issues. But we're seeing this play out in the court of public opinion. We're seeing this play out in the court of law around the country. But we're also seeing the broader conversation about criminal justice reform. And just this week, President Obama, the first president to ever visit a prison while in office, was a truly remarkable moment, and I think is going to spark maybe some bipartisan agreement on what we need to do about this whole system.
And he talked about there, but for the grace of God, the small difference between possibly being in prison or being in the White House.
Right. I mean, there's no question that racial prejudice is still alive in this country, and it is still alive in the criminal justice system. And you can see it by the severity of sentences, even in drug-related crimes, for heroin versus crack cocaine, white versus black. I mean, you see that. And I think both the president with that visit and the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, have called for reform on that. Because if you have young people in prison for making stupid mistakes, which is what young people do, the idea that we incarcerate them for 20 years at an astronomical amount of money and ruin their lives forever is crazy. And anything we can do to take as much of the prejudice out of that system as we can is a good thing.
And the president just pardoned 46 nonviolent drug offenders. I mean,
there sets the right message.
There's an agenda here of law enforcement reform.
Well, and as has been discussed, is well needed. Look, we have such a high proportion of our population in prison. And it's because for the last generation or so, we've built to a system that was not able to regulate itself, essentially. I mean, we've spoken to the issue of race, but also the determinate sentencing phase that we went through and those kinds of things. We need to get over that because we cannot be a free society if we incarcerate so much of our society. So I hope that that all of the parties that are seemingly moving in the right direction continue to carry that momentum
forward. And allow the judges much more discretion in the sentencing, because you're not going to take away stupidity from teenagers. You're not.
No, it's great.
One thing that's encouraging here is that you have an African-American woman who's in the role of attorney general addressing an audience devoted to the African-American leadership of law enforcement agencies. That's not to suggest that you know, snap your fingers, everything's fine. But it shows that there is a recognition that law enforcement agencies locally and across the country need to reflect the communities that they protect.
Finally, Indiana Fever star Tamika Catchings this week won an ESPY, the first ever Sports Humanitarian of the Year award. The announcement was part of that little TV show in Los Angeles. Catchings wins a $75,000 grant to help her Catch the Stars Foundation, which promotes fitness, literacy, and mentoring to young people in Indianapolis. And Delaney, first of all, I want to make note after last week, I'm coming to you first on a sports
and it doesn't involve sex. How about that?
Well, last week's question didn't involve sex. It only involved nudity.
Oh, now, I see. Excuse me.
Can you name
and made the natural.
Can you name a better role model
I think this is great. I mean, she's been a role model for the community. She's using her star quality to inspire young people, and I think this is a great award.
There was criticism of the ESPYs for not giving a Courage Award to Lauryn Hill, but she was honored during the broadcast, and certainly Indiana gets pretty good treatment here.
Yeah, regardless, Lauryn Hill got some award, rightfully so, and we caught a star in Tamika Catchings. We really did.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Pete Seat, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.